It's the 10 to 1 podcast with your host, Brad Oman, featuring not Ben Conowitz and Nate Laux. And here's the podcast.
Applause light. Everyone's
going crazy.
And then come down. End credits. We are done.
All right.
Not Ben Conowitz is my favorite Ben Conowitz.
Yeah. He's not here again. He keeps choosing to go on these vacations, and he tells us maybe like 2 or 3 days ahead of time, and
or just
then,
on the plane, guys. Yeah. I'm going to where is he running now? Like Marco Island or something? I don't know.
Have you ever been to Marco Island? I've been to Marco Island.
I've not. Have you?
Yeah, I went for spring break my senior year of high school. Actually,
was it good?
Yeah, it was fine. My friend's grandmother's had a condo there, and so we just spent spring break there.
Did you create any hijinks while you were in?
Oh, absolutely. So we were cruising around listening to Usher's Yeah. Grandma's Jeep.
I don't know the words to that. All I know is
those are most of the words.
Yeah.
And then we would we'd go on the beach, and there would be other people our age because it was spring break, just having beers and hanging out. And
did you have some brewskis even though you were not of age yet?
Had some brewskis. Hung out with some people. Had a good time. The cops came and busted up a little beach party once. No one got in trouble. They just apprehended the beer and put it in the back of their car. So
and then went and drank it.
Probably.
I've seen Superbad.
Yeah,
I know how this works.
This was back during a time too where there were like camera phones were not good, so like we actually do have some like hard copy photos of like us with the police who took the beer from us
because like, we actually took pictures with them. Well, I would imagine anywhere that you like, my grandparents live by South Padre Island in Texas,
yeah,
and so I went down there for spring break one time, and it was a lot of fun. But I can't imagine. Like cops in those areas, high tourist spring break areas, can arrest everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? It's just impossible.
Especially spring break. I mean, yeah, exactly. What are you going
to
do? Like,
just give it to us and go.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, Ben's down at spring break in Marco Island. No, he's over in Vegas fucking around. I don't even know what he's doing or why, but
he's
like
with Zach Caney, our friend Zach Caney,
yeah.
and I genuinely don't know why they went.
And he just didn't want to record. Like we asked him, and he was just like, "Nah, you guys do it." It's like, "Oh, cool. He's real dedicated to the cause."
Yeah. So if you're like ranking your favorite host of this podcast, I don't care where you put Brad and I. It could be 1A, 1B, but Ben definitely should be last on that list.
Yeah. Even put him at like number 4 even probably.
Yeah, like just silence.
Yeah.
Silence.
And we have never had a guest on the SNL podcast as long as I can remember.
I don't think so.
So putting him at number 4 is perfectly fine.
I agree.
Yeah. So speaking of Saturday Night Live, that's why we're here. And we had a new episode hosted by Rami Youssef, a stand-up comedian and the star of his own self-titled comedy series, Rami, which is on Hulu. It is an Emmy-nominated series. The series itself wasn't technically nominated, but he was nominated for Outstanding Directing and Outstanding Lead Actor.
He's so charming.
He really is. And what's interesting about him, too, is he's charming in a way where he's not overly confident, but he's also not super nervous either. He's kind of like just got this like calming middle ground. It was really interesting to watch him work, especially in the monologue, because he just feels like he's kind of there and just like, hey, here's what I have to say. And if you like it, take it. If you don't, then I'll be fine.
He has a new comedy special on Max. Did you watch it yet?
No, I haven't.
It's really good. I mean, it's him. If you know anything about his stand-up, it is just obviously a continuation of his first major stand-up that was on Max. But it's really good. He's very calm. He's also a comedian that likes to help people think a little bit too, mm-hmm. right? He will kind of go from great joke, to serious point, and he's just okay and comfortable with doing that, and in as a rhetorical like method to get people to think but also to make them laugh, because laughing often disengages us, right? Mm-hmm. It can help us think about deeper things when we're not even thinking that we are thinking about it. So great comedy special if you want to watch it. He's got a very unique worldview as an American that is Muslim and an immigrant, these kind of things. So I highly recommend that as well.
There you go. All right. Well, let's dig into the overall episode and start with, as we typically do, the bottom of the barrel.
Easter Cold Open, written by Mike DiCenzo, Allison Gates, James Austin Johnson, and Ken Sublett. Donald Trump, played by James Austin Johnson, is promoting his God Bless the USA Bible, which is unfortunately a real thing.
A very, very real thing.
Unbelievable. And it's all to raise money for the Trump campaign. a Bible. And, you know, it's just that right there. And maybe Brad, we're getting into the territory that we've talked about before with Trump. The hard thing is you can't parody a living parody. Right? Like, yeah. This is already absurd.
Exactly.
It's already crazy. And so you're going to put James Austin Johnson out there and do something that was not that different than what is real. I was actually excited when it opened up and there was a joke about Mary and the other Mary, which is what the scriptures call, you know, this, they don't give her like Mary. It's like Mary Magdalene and the other Mary or something, yeah. Or Mary, mother of Jesus, the other Mary. And I thought, oh, there's some really great comedy and meta, like narrative comedy in how some of the times the scriptures describe things.
Yeah.
They could have done a sketch like that.
I would have much preferred, as much as I don't care for the Bible, I would have much preferred them to do something along those lines. That's what I'm saying.
They could have done something creative in Easter or you know, or even brought in some cultural things in that.
Yeah.
And it would have been fun. But then I see Donald Trump coming out and I'm like, oh, you just ruined something that I was like, oh, okay, what is this?
Yeah.
This is fun. What did you think of this?
I didn't like it. You know, it's just like you just said, this is one of those situations, and there have been many situations like this over the years, where what is happening in real life is already ridiculous and ludicrous enough that to lampoon it is extremely difficult. And this just, the jokes write themselves when you just hear about the fact that Donald Trump is selling Bibles that also have the Constitution in them and have the American flag on it. And it's just like, what are we doing here, folks? You know? And so like, there wasn't really anything special about that they added to this that provided any sort of new insightful commentary. And sure, James Austin Johnson's Donald Trump is always going to be good. That's
fine.
It's
the best. It is the best impression of Donald Trump that I've seen.
Yeah.
It's so good.
But I, you know, there was nothing here that like made me really laugh. There was nothing, you know, that was like good satire to me. You know, it's just like you can't really get a lot out of this. And I wish that they would pull back on the Trump and Biden stuff, because it's just not working for them.
100% agree, but I think we've got a lot more of that to come.
Oh yeah.
Rami Yusuf monologue, written by Rami Yusuf. Host Rami Yusuf performs a stand-up routine about the holy month of Ramadan, receiving a call from the Biden campaign and prayer. You know, he has this comment in there where he says he's talking about praying and the requests he was getting to prayer. He says, I'm friends with a lot of sinners, just disgusting people. And it was really resonant for me.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Nate.
So the receiving a call from the Biden campaign, and that is actually in his comedy special.
Yeah.
He took that from that. And it was really interesting because he talks about, so the way politics are, I don't know if you felt this watching this, but the way politics are, we're in such a binary political season, right? Mm-hmm. Are you for or against? Are you A or are you B? And so when he is in there kind of, I think subtly or just, you know, kind of swiping on the Biden campaign and using him a little bit to get Muslim voters and everything, that automatically goes to, oh, he must not, he's not a Biden fan. He must be a Trump fan or something like this. Yeah. You know, there's that kind of meta narrative that exists. And then he goes to the comedy, I think a trans woman should run for, and his comment there, not as many woos, was just so subtle, so funny. I thought he was just masterfully delivered this whole monologue. I loved it.
I will say though, I do continually get frustrated when somebody decides to like, be proud of the fact that I'm not happy with either choice.
No, okay.
It's like okay, but like, come on, man. Like,
there is one better.
Yeah, one is clearly better than the other. Like, don't sit there and like feel like oh, you're the cool one who's like I don't like all these people. It's like, great, fucker. Like fucking make a choice though still. So like, but there is some sharp stuff here. I appreciated, you know, especially in the current cultural environment of him coming out and like making a very clear statement about the Israel-Palestine conflict. That's something that like not a lot of people are willing to do right now, you know, in the face of potential backlash and things like that. And so,
but I read some comments online though about how people on both sides were very happy with it, right?
Yeah.
Where he talks about a free Palestine but also releasing the hostages,
yeah,
these kind of things. And so I thought he handled that really beautifully in a, like you said, in one of the probably, maybe perhaps the most charged political topic right now. And I thought he handled it very well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I thought it was a good cold open. I liked that it introduced people to his stand-up, and I hope more people will watch it. All right, moving on. Couple goals. Couples on a game show played by Rami Youssef, Ego Wodum, Mikey Day, and Heidi Gardner compete to see who knows their partner the best. I'm pretty sure SNL has done this concept many, many times. I think they did it back in the Quinta Brunson episode or something similar to that.
So game shows are a very common formula on SNL that has been forever. And then there's this specific subsect of game show where the couples are like trying to tell how much they actually know about each other. And
that's what I'm saying. It's the same sketch.
They usually vary up like how they do it, but like, and it's a very common game show trope. And it's the newlywed game essentially, you know? But yes, it's, you know, they pull it out. But what always makes it more fun is how they play with the formula and like what the, you know, how the answers go.
And sometimes also how the chemistry is between the cast member couples, right? There sometimes just a look, if you have a good cast member that can give a Keenan type of look, or, you know, it can make the sketch go a lot better, because what you're looking for is discomfort, right? You're looking for the comedy is in the weirdness of the answer, but also the discomfort of the response of the other couple. So.
And in this case, I think what I liked is there were two layers of good jokes happening here. There were, on one level, you had Heidi Gardner and Mikey Day, who were like on complete opposite ends of the spectrum and like having just a weird clash of like what they thought each other's answers would be, which is, you know, good in itself. But then you have the Ego Wodum and Rami Youssef area, where he's got these long, complex, thought out answers that are all tied to his worry about what happens if he's wrongly accused of accidentally killing his wife.
Yep.
And I like that you don't have Rami reading the cue cards. You have James Austin Johnson reading him in his, like, you know, just general game show voice.
He does a really good job.
Yeah, and that made it so much funnier.
No, and I do love the idea of getting so far into your head, because, you know, that's what it is. Rami's in his head, like, what if this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens, and the response just goes longer, right? It was good. It was, but like I said, it was a repeated concept.
I'm fine with this repeated concept, though, because, like, there are some comedic formulas like this that just have a tendency to work, and it just depends on the material that you use to do it. And so, like, in this case, I liked the escalation of how deeper it got as it went along, getting to the point that he like found himself in a Bonnie and Clyde scenario with his wife's best friend, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked it.
All right, let's move on to Please Don't Destroy We Got Too High, featuring Travis Scott. Written by Dan Bulla, Martin Herlihy, John Higgins, and Ben Marshall. If you don't know, those are the last three of the Please Don't Destroy guys. Rami Youssef, Ben Marshall, John Higgins, and Martin Herlihy party with Travis Scott. So, like, maybe a quarter to a third of the way through this song, I'm like, okay, this is just a...
Where's the jokes? Yeah, this is just a song.
Like, you're just doing a song with awkward guys. And then it takes this turn, which I should have known. Please Don't Destroy aren't going to give us something that doesn't turn, because they're masters of escalation, right? They're just so good at it. And then it just gets so funny for me. I loved this so much.
Oh, yeah, same.
I just loved how, you know, these guys who maybe don't get high regularly, which I'm going to bet they do in real life, but they don't in this sketch. And the paranoia that comes, their individual responses. What I love now about Please Don't Destroy is all we really know about them is from the sketches they do on you know, what do they do? Maybe 15 sketches, pre-tapes a year last year. And then they've done maybe, let's say, 10 of them this year. I don't know if it's even that many. But you're starting to figure out the personalities of each one of them, which makes it even more fun then. It's like Larry, Curly, and Moe, right? You know the personalities, and when how they responded kind of fit the personalities now that I expect their personalities to be. And so they've become characters for me. And so it just become even more funny, because I'm connecting to characters that I now understand and know through SNL. And just like, you know, Adam Sandler doing a bit or a character and recurring it, I feel like their actual just personalities are characters now. And I love this very much. What'd you think?
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, there's a great dynamic between them, in the same way there was with the Lonely Island Boys back when they were doing digital shorts. And I on on top of the turn, which is very funny in itself, I also like the extra layer that they gave Rami in this one too, where he's just awkward and like
so funny,
like shows up to a club wearing shorts and like
not knowing why. Like,
and I also love the added bit of like social anxiety that he feels because he reflects back. He's like, "Why the hell did I say that when I told it? Like, well, like, what does this even mean?"
Let me tell a funny story for our listeners real quick about our cast, our co-host that's not here. So he and I were going to this event. Well, we weren't going together, but we were both invited to go to this event. It was like a gala for a nonprofit in the area that we live in. And so it is like a suit and tie event, maybe even people wearing tuxes. Very, very, very nice event. And our buddy, Benny Kay, who we love dearly, shows up in cargo shorts and a t-shirt. And I believe flip-flops, and it is November.
This is not a rare occurrence. This is no. Like Ben's signature wardrobe, no matter what the weather.
And so it actually made me think of him a little bit where, you know, they're in the club and he's going, why am I wearing cargo shorts? You know, and it just made me think of Ben a little bit. But also at the end where he's making pants out of the
napkins. Yes, it's
just so good. I loved it.
Yeah, no, this was a great sketch.
All right, let's move on. Immigrant Dad Talk Show, written by Mike DiCenzo, Jimmy Fowley, Marcelo Hernandez, Jake Norbert, and Sarah O'Sullivan. I'm going to say this. Marcelo Hernandez seems to be becoming a more integral part of SNL, even just in the last 6 or 7 episodes. Mm-hmm. Like, he just seems to really be becoming a featured part.
Yeah.
Hamed Ahmed Mumad, played by Rami Youssef, and Joaquin Antonio, played by Marcelo Hernandez, host a talk show as immigrant fathers. My favorite part of this, two things. Marcelo Hernandez, his very quick Spanish makes me laugh. He's done this before, I think, and we got an update before.
Yeah.
And it just makes me laugh. I actually think I saw a stand-up bit where he does this as well. So it's an ability and a gift that he has to go very, very quick with the Spanish. But the other thing was Andrew Dismukes doing parkour.
Yeah.
It just was so dumb. It's so, and he just handled it so well. And I don't know. I just thought that was such an interesting little turn there. What did you think of this?
I liked it. You know, it's as somebody who comes from a Mexican family, even though I didn't have any family members who were like this necessarily, because I mean, my dad was white. But like you understand aspects of Mexican culture and stuff like that. And so there are definitely fathers like this and whatnot, and having that identification that also comes from having you know, Rami playing a father who also is an immigrant as well, coming from his own background, was a nice way of bringing Marcelo and Rami together. And so there were some amusing things about it that worked for me. However, to me, this sketch kind of showed the limitations that Rami Youssef has as a performer when it comes to sketch comedy, because as funny as he is and as decent of a job as he did throughout the evening, I do think that there wasn't much of versatility as far as what he could do as a character. And this one was, I think, an opportunity where he could have really showed it, because as an immigrant father, you can put on, you know, an accent. You can really lean into being the character. And it felt like
he put on an accent, right?
He did, but it felt like he was really dipping in and out of it. He would forget, you know?
Not like Marcelo Hernandez, who couldn't.
Right, exactly, yeah. You know? And so, like, that for me, like, it didn't feel like he was quite as skilled as really getting into a character. Yeah. In sketch comedy, as opposed to, like, you know, like Marcelo does, you know, and many hosts have before.
Yeah, that's a good note. All right, moving on. Team Captain. The team captain, played by Rami Youssef, gives an inspirational speech at the request of his coach, Keenan Thompson. Now, I've said this many times in the past, but Brad's a naughty kitty that demands discipline.
That's just true. That's true.
What did you think of this?
I loved this sketch.
I thought you would. I watched it. I'm like, this is going to be right up Brad's alley.
Yeah, it has that right level of escalation.
Yep.
It's the perfect sketch for Keenan Thompson, because he gets limited lines to say, and he makes the most out of the lines that he does get to say.
Yep, it is. It was right in his wheelhouse.
Yeah, exactly. And I love hearing continued from the teammates of just like how it kept getting worse, and like the messages he kept sending and the pictures. And yeah, this was a perfectly absurd sketch that I absolutely loved, and it was cracking me up.
Even the subtle characters they had, James Austin Johnson being the like counselor that has to stay with them, you know.
Yeah,
even his line was delivered really funnily. It was really good, and it was so weird, and it as I was watching, I'm going, where is this going? And I thought, oh, this is just going to be a weird sketch, and I'm going to love it. And yeah. I did. I thought it was great.
And you know, one thing that I, it's sketches like this too, where I think about how much different the in-studio experience must be and how it has the tendency to make a sketch maybe not as funny as it is to people watching at home. Because I don't know if you think about this, but like the James Austin Johnson character, when he's introduced, it's because they suddenly cut to him and you realize that he's there. Because
you didn't know he was there the whole
time. Right, exactly. But in studio, he has to make an entrance. He has to be on the stage. And so who knows how long he was there for that bit, and so people have seen him, and so that entrance isn't a punchline for them like it is for us.
And that is the camera is almost a character in some of these sketches,
for sure,
right? And you don't have that in the live studio,
and that's why we talk about the importance of directing too, and how like a poorly timed cut, you know, the wrong camera shot,
which is happening quite a bit.
It can ruin a joke. You know, it can totally derail a sketch and really suck the wind out of its sails.
Yeah, and also, as I've listened to former cast members, if a cut doesn't happen when it should and they're expecting a laugh at that moment and the laugh doesn't come, it will throw them off.
Yeah.
Because what's going on? And they didn't know that the cut didn't happen. Is, you know, they just think the joke's not working.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And so all of these things have to be conducted well and have to go out and directed perfectly to make SNL happen.
Yeah, 100%.
All right. Let's move on to Ozempic for Ramadan. A company is rebranding Ozempic for use during Ramadan fasting. I thought this was just okay.
I agree, because one thing I will say is I did appreciate the new cultural perspective that came from having somebody with Rami Yusuf's background on the show.
Agreed.
Because we've never really gotten commercials like with this approach before, you know, because of him being Muslim and whatnot. And so having this specific prescription medication tied to that aspect of his identity was an interesting approach, but it didn't really feel like it did anything interesting with the material. Like, it was just kind of there, you know, like pretty much exactly what I expected it to be, what it was, and it was just kind of mildly amusing.
Yeah, I agree. It just, nothing about it really got to me. It was well done, it was well produced, it was creative enough, right? But it was just okay.
Yeah,
like, it just wasn't great.
Yeah, I agree. I would have much rather them cut this and put back in the cut for time.
Yeah, that
sketch.
We'll get to. Yeah. All right. Let's go to Weekend Update with Colin Jost and Michael Che. Do you have a number already written down yet, Brad, for the Bradometer?
I don't.
Can you please write down a number? The Bradometer is a number that Brad comes up with about the chemistry and his kind of feelings that come from within him about the spiritual and emotional and comedic chemistry that the two hosts have. Now, the Bradometer is not about the overall health and success of the Weekend Update sketches or bits. It's just about whether or not Michael Che and Colin Jost had the chemistry necessary to pull off Weekend Update at a high level. So let's, it's just me, and I am the worst at this. Ben does a better job at this, at predicting that. But I'm going to say there wasn't a ton. There was some. Colin Jost had a nice joke about Stranger Things, and Michael Che gave him a little bit of crap for that. But I'm going to say it was only about 67%.
Well, you know, I will say that you are pretty close. So they gave it a 70.
I didn't go over, though.
Yeah,
I won.
You go over. You definitely won. And Ben lost.
Yeah, again.
Per the usual.
So, yeah, I felt the same way. I thought it was good. Let me read it real quick for our listeners in case you haven't listened. Weekend Update anchors Colin Jost and Michael Che cover the biggest news of the week, such as the famous cherry blossom tree in Washington, D.C. being chopped down and former presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama attending a fundraiser for President Joe Biden in New York City. So you just thought it was okay.
Yeah.
The jokes, same, just okay?
Yeah, just okay. It didn't seem like it was particularly strong.
The Stranger Things joke was funny.
Yeah, Stranger Things joke was funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, otherwise, there wasn't really a lot of standout punchlines to me in this particular edition. Although I will say there was an aspect of Weekend Update that I did enjoy immensely.
All right, moving on. Weekend Update bit. We'll go to both of them. I'll see which one you like the best. TikToker Piper Dunster on Kate Middleton conspiracy theories, written by Mike DiCenzo, Jimmy Fowley, Jake Norwin, and Sierra O'Sullivan. TikToker Piper Dunster, played by Chloe Fineman, makes an appearance on Weekend Update to discuss her controversial posts. Did you get involved at all into the Kate Middleton stuff? Because I did.
I got involved to the sense that I knew what was happening, and I saw the GIF that would like showed the Photoshop reveal of like, oh, well, this is a magazine cover superimposed onto the thing. And I understood that there was like a general question of like, seriously though, where's Kate Middleton?
Yeah, and it's a legitimate question.
Yeah, but that was pretty much it.
Yeah,
because I will never hesitate to say this. I could give two fucks about the royal family. I could not care about anything less than the royal family.
Yeah, I know, but that's why it got me. I'm like, that's what I was a little surprised at myself. I didn't care at all. I genuinely don't care at all about the royal family. I mean, I don't like that they're racist, but like I just don't think about them often.
Yeah.
And so, but the whole idea for me wasn't I care about the royal family. For me, I care about like what, like they are a monarchy that has endless amounts of money, and they thought this would pass,
right?
Like the audacity of it for me. But what did you think of this weekend update bit?
I thought it was okay.
This is what I thought too.
Didn't do anything surprising or overly clever. Like once they had set up what it was, I knew it was just going to be a string of TikToks where like she was proven to be in the wrong and made mistakes, and
which
like,
happens all the time.
Yeah, it was a very normal thing, and so I you know, it was just whatever.
All right, let's go to the one that I think you and I both liked better. Flacco the Owl's Widow on Her Husband's Death in Autopsy, written by Megan Callahan Shaw, who I think is a new writer, Josh Patton, Pete Schultz, Casey Shornima, and Asha Ward. Those are all actually very new writers. Flacco the Owl's Widow, played by Sarah Sherman, visits Weekend Update to talk about her husband's recent passing and the results of his autopsy. And Sarah Sherman, whether she's in an owl costume or not, is going to pick on Colin Jost, and I like it.
Yeah, the fact that this was another stealth way of making fun of Colin Jost just made me absolutely happy. On top of the fact that Sarah Sherman's performance is just like so silly in itself, because she's constantly flapping her arms for the wings and doing the ongoing who bit, and the way that she would turn her head like an owl to look at Colin when they did that. And of course, every punchline at Colin Jost's expense. I'm so happy with this dynamic that they have, and that they're able to keep this going and do it in a way that still feels like it's not getting old. Like the fact that they're able to fit it in such a variety of Weekend Update characters, so that it's not just Sarah Sherman making fun of Colin Jost, is just makes it that much better.
I agree. I thought she was great. I thought this was funny. I thought it was creative, because again, they're just looking for ways for Sarah Sherman to have an interaction with Colin Jost, and that's all you have to do. But you can't just put her out there every time. You have to, or you can, but I would still laugh. But I love that they're finding other ways to do it.
Yeah.
And Sarah Sherman's so silly and so creative that it was really fun. All right, Murder Detective. A detective played by Andrew Dismukes tries to make his fellow officers, Rami Youssef, Ego Wodum, Devin Walker, Marcelo Hernandez, and James Austin Johnson, laugh. Sarah was She was holding on to not laugh at the end.
As best she could.
By Andrew Dismukes, who was hilarious in this. And it escalated. Actually, the joke in the beginning, I'm like, okay, it's fine. But towards the end, I really loved this sketch. I thought it was great. I didn't think Rami Youssef was great in it. Like, in some sketches, he just wasn't. He was a character and not a featured part of it.
Yeah. So I wrote about this in my review, actually, as far as like, it's an interesting performance that you want from an SNL host, because you want them to be the star of the episode, but you don't want the episode to necessarily be entirely about them. And you want them to fit seamlessly into the SNL cast without necessarily like dominating and, you know, not letting anybody else get the spotlight. You know, you want it to be this nice harmony. And for Rami, what I felt was, I felt like most of the time, he did fit in with the cast pretty well, but he wasn't necessarily great as the characters, and they didn't give him a lot to like make him stand out as the host and like be the star in a way that was like satisfying. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. I felt that way. Even in the game show, right? Anybody could have done that role.
Yeah.
And anybody could have held that sign up. He was fine. He didn't make it bad. But there was nothing that they were using that Rami Youssef can only especially bring to that role.
Yeah.
And there are sometimes there's hosts where only they can do that, I think, well.
Yeah.
I think about Quinta Brunson when she did the car.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if a lot of other people could have pulled that off.
Yeah.
It was just her personality, her quirkiness, her just eccentricities. Thank you. That was able to do that. And so I didn't feel that they had that sketch for Rami Yusuf.
Yeah.
Just to highlight him.
Yeah, I totally agree. I do think Dismukes made this sketch work. I think that I might have preferred that, like, I'm torn because I do like the idea of him constantly trying the same punchline over and over again. It adds to, like, the awkwardness of it. Yeah. But I also wish, like, he would have, like, tried different punchlines as well. I'm not sure if it would have made it work even better or what. But
it was great, though, at the end when Sarah Silverman is, because he knows she's starting to go. And when the cast members start knowing that they're breaking, right, they want to make each other laugh.
Yeah.
Just like they want to make the audience laugh.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it was a lot of fun. All right, moving on. Tiny Desk Concert, written by Allison Gates, Martin Herlihy, Bowen Yang, and Celeste Neim. Do you watch any of the Tiny Desk concerts?
Yeah, I've seen some here and there. It just depends on who's on.
There was one recently with Justin Timberlake, a fan of this podcast and former host of SNL.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. You should watch it. It's so much fun. But I am a big fan of the Tiny Desk concerts. So I liked this. I thought it was hilarious. I always wonder when I've had these conversations are in my head about, I wonder where they're clearly filming this in an office. And I wonder if there's other people working. I wonder, like, you know, I've had these dialogues in my head about this. But did it work for you?
To an extent. I thought the premise was an amusing one, and having Bowen Yang come in and be frustrated by it continually was a funny premise.
Because he had a quiet episode.
Yeah, he did, actually. I just didn't feel like it really went anywhere beyond that, like, single joke, you know? This was another one where I didn't feel like Rami Yusuf, like, was particularly doing anything that like worked for the sketch and made it that much better. I thought it was just fine. I didn't dislike it, but I wasn't over the moon for it either.
It's a sketch that I thought the premise was great, and I liked where it was going in the beginning. I liked when Bowen Yang came in, and that was nice. But like you said, and then it just didn't go anywhere.
Yeah,
like it just repeated that kind of thing. Now Bowen Yang can do a really good NPR voice, a really good podcast voice.
Yeah,
and that made me laugh as well. His kind of inflections, but it didn't end as funny as I could. It's a sketch that I think, again, we're idiots. I don't know, but there was some more to that could have been that didn't happen.
Yeah.
I wish, because I like the premise. I like where they were going.
Also, was it just me? Or was there something weird about Chloe Trost's lines, like that, they almost didn't fit in, like, with the script? Like, someone, like, they did a rewrite and they were like, but they didn't adjust a certain part of the sketch.
Yeah, it did. It did. Also, I couldn't tell if she was angry that she was playing. I mean, the idea of playing a milk jug made me laugh a little bit, but like, I think that's a little too meta, because, you know, they often have bands that come in here and they can't fit the whole group in.
Yeah.
And they...
Or all their instruments.
Or all their instruments and stuff like that. But I don't know if people really know that. And right. So I just don't think that worked.
Yeah.
That was not accessible enough.
Yeah.
Or her response to it just wasn't good enough. I don't know. It, like you said, that whole character didn't work for me.
Yeah.
All right, that is it. We've got a Cut for Time sketch. Let's go with that one.
Yeah.
The hitman. In this Cut for Time sketch, a hitman played by Rami Yusuf keeps getting interrupted by the guy who is delivering his food, played by Marcelo Hernandez. I liked this. I thought it was pretty funny. I it didn't escalate perfectly for me. It ended pretty okay.
Yeah.
But there was enough to this, and particularly in Marcelo Hernandez's performance,
yeah,
that I thought was really funny. It was, for me, it was one that I would have put in the show.
Not in the same scenario, but I've been in this position where I've had a conversation with an Uber Eats driver where it's basically the same kind of thing, where I'm trying to figure out where they are, and they just keep saying, delivery, yeah, I have your food. It's like, yeah, I know, that's why you're here. But like, we have to figure out where you are.
Oh, I would have loved to have seen you do that, because I could just imagine you getting increasingly frustrated.
I actually had a similar situation happened with when I was getting picked up at the airport recently, and the person was trying to tell me like where they were, and they told me to go to one area, and I went there and they weren't there. And he's like, "Are you sure you're not upstairs?" And I'm like, "Yeah, man, I'm sure I'm not upstairs. I know the difference between downstairs and upstairs like at going the airport."
Full Chris Farley on this.
It was so frustrating. But so I don't know. Have you seen The Killer yet with Michael Fassbender?
Is that what this is based off?
Yeah.
I didn't know. I figured it was based off of something, but yeah. No, I have not.
This is essentially a parody of the opening scene of The Killer with Michael Fassbender. And so like it's a thing where you hear his inner monologue and he's basically talking about how efficient he is at his job and like what he's doing and how he's doing it and that kind of stuff. And this is pretty much like that exact thing. But the approach, obviously, in the movie is a little bit different than this. It's interesting, though, because in the movie, the scene itself actually has a punchline as well. And so as I was watching this, I was like, okay, so how are they going to make this different? And then, you know, I did see it and it did work for the most part.
Interesting. Again, though, I didn't even think about this when I was watching it, but based on our comments, another thing that Rami Youssef did fine, but anybody could have played that.
Yeah.
And so, so let's talk a little bit about what you thought of Rami Youssef in this episode.
Yeah. I mean, I think he was perfectly serviceable. I think that he's more adept at playing versions of himself. You know, that's why his show on Hulu has been so acclaimed, and he has gotten, you know, acclaim for being in it as himself. I mean, the show is called Rami, and he is essentially
experiences from his own life.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so, and it's the same thing with his stand-up too. You know, he's good at stand-up. That's his life. That's his material. He has a great approach to comedy. He has a sharp mind, a unique perspective on things. I just don't think that character-driven sketch comedy is necessarily his forte. And it doesn't mean that he's a bad performer overall. It just means he has limitations as far as what he can do and like where he's the most funny and how his comedy, comedic, you know, approach and demeanor can be utilized.
Yeah, he really didn't go all in as like even take a guy like this who doesn't act, Nate Bargatze.
Yeah.
Who I think went in on some of these sketches when he was on more so, or at least committed more so, because Rami Youssef is a good actor. He's a good actor.
Yeah.
So I thought he was going to go in a little bit more on some of these. He didn't hold back. He didn't hurt the sketches at all, but there wasn't a lot for him. And maybe just the sketches didn't work as well for that. But I don't know. I just thought it was fine. I thought it was fine.
I'm thinking of somebody of like Ayo Edebiri too, you know.
Yep.
She's very skilled when it comes to she's done stand up before. She's an actor in both movies and television. She's not often playing characters that are remarkably dissimilar from herself.
Yep.
Or like that you know, feel that, then her roles never feel like she's a chameleon necessarily, you know, not like like an Adam Driver, you know, people. Yep. Like a Philip Seymour Hoffman or a Tom Hardy, you know, people like that. But she's a great performer and a great actress. And so when she was on Saturday Night Live, she crushed it. She, you know,
I can't wait for her to come back.
Already. Even the characters who didn't seem like they would be different from each other on paper had something that was a little bit different from the way she played it elsewhere.
Yeah.
And Rami just didn't have a lot of variation between the characters that he played from sketch to sketch.
What is, I cannot remember, I'm so sorry, but what is the movie he did with Emma Stone?
Poor Things.
Yeah. I have not seen that yet, but does he play himself in that?
Essentially, you know, it's the vibe is a little bit different because the movie has this kind of steampunk Victorian,
yep,
you know, style to it as far as the production design. And so he fits into the world like his character does. But the kind of character he plays is very much like a Rami Youssef character. Yep. Yep. In that world.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, let's go to sketch of the night. What did you think was the sketch of the night? I'll go first. I really ended up, there's a couple things that I liked. I didn't think there was a sketch of the year in here tonight. I didn't think any of this episode had that. We don't pick Weekend Update bits. So I probably would have picked Sarah Sherman's because it made me laugh a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with Please Don't Destroy's We Got Too High because that one made me laugh probably the most. What did you pick?
Please Don't Destroy was also the one I picked when I did my review for Slash Film. I thought it was the best sketch. But very close together and not too far behind I think I like this one more than you did, but I thought the couple goals was very, very funny. And then along with it, the team captain sketch.
Yeah, I was wondering if you're going to pick team captain, because I know you like that one quite a bit. I like team captain better than couple goals.
I figured as much.
Maybe too, because it came so early in the episode, and I was waiting for after a bad cold open, I was waiting for like, okay, let's let Rami Yusuf do his thing.
Yeah.
And it just didn't. But it, like you said, there was nothing wrong with that sketch at all. And there was a lot of fun in it. And just whatever. All right. This was hard for me. Who did you pick as MVP?
It was pretty difficult to determine this one because there weren't really any particular like standouts in like the overall sketches. But I think the one that I settled on, even though the sketches themselves were not like the overall best, and one of them, honestly, you technically couldn't count because it's the cut for time, but I went with Marcelo Hernandez.
Yeah, that's a good choice. Because I'm still thinking right now. I there's part of me that wants to pick Andrew Dismukes just because I really loved the sketch, you know, where he does the detective sketch, and the parkour thing made me laugh quite a bit. But that shouldn't be an MVP type of performance.
No.
That's indicative of, there wasn't any really standout performers.
No, no one really like got a huge, like.
I can pick Sarah Sherman. Yeah. I think, you know, but other than.
You give it to Keenan for team captain, you know.
But also there was like, you know, there wasn't like Heidi Gardner. Where was she? Right. She wasn't in tonight. Much. James Austin Johnson was in 5. He had a big night, so he could be, you know, he did good.
But
he never does like.
Yeah, half the roles he did, he was like just
game
kind
show
of
host,
yeah,
right?
just kind of there, you know.
Punky Johnson was only in 1.
I will say though, I think the one that you could argue would be the game show one, because that's the one I feel like he was most prominent, and his delivery in it was what made it funny.
Chloe Trost was only in 1. Bowen Yang was only in 1. So there was a lot of our regular performers that, you know, especially Chloe Trost has been in quite a few lately.
Yeah.
Bowen Yang, you know, who wasn't, Molly Carney was in None.
Yeah. It happens every now and then.
Yeah. It just felt weird to me. Like it just felt, the dynamics of all of that felt weird to me. Like I felt it in the show, but yeah, I think Sarah Sherman has an argument for it as well. But Marcelo Hernandez is a great pick. I'll echo you for that. That's good.
There you go.
But again, I don't think anybody really had an MVP. I thought it was just all okay.
Yeah, this was a solid episode. Not a home run. Not terrible. Just an enjoyable.
Was there a bad sketch, you think?
The Trump opener.
Yeah, cold open is always bad. But like other than that, I don't think.
Yeah, there was nothing where I was like, oh, that was awful.
Yeah. But, all right. Well, we've got a couple, I think, episodes coming up. Do you know who the next host is?
The next host is a Saturday Night Live alum, a former cast member, one of our favorites that we love to see come back to SNL.
Love her so much.
And that is Kristen Wiig. She will be hosting the show on April 6th. That's going to be very exciting.
I saw something stupid on X, which I know it shocks you, but on the Twitters, I saw it. I know Brad gets upset if I say X, but...
Yeah, we say Twitter.
I saw the dumbest thing today where it said... Saturday Night Live why has Saturday Night Live never had a beautiful woman as a cast member?
Oh my God. Just the what? Like what?
And I had a big crush on Kristen Wiig when she's on the cast.
Yeah.
I think she's beautiful.
I think Tina Fey is gorgeous.
Yep. I think Ben would certainly argue for Heidi Gardner, right? It was just so silly to me that was even like a thing.
Yeah.
That people, A, it doesn't matter if it was, but B, that's just simply not true.
Jenny Slate's. Abby Elliott.
Yep.
And all at the same time as well, I had a huge crush.
Nassim Pedrad is just gorgeous.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I had a huge crush on Casey Wilson when she was on the show. I love Casey Wilson. Oh my gosh.
So it just baffled me that this, and it had a bunch of like, you know, people like retweeted it, but just goes to show you that just because you're popular on X or Twitter doesn't mean you have nice takes.
That's very true, Nate. It's good insight there.
All right, so guess who's coming after Kristen Wiig? I'm so excited.
It's another one of our favorites, and I'm glad that they were able to fit him in because he's a very busy man. But whenever he comes down SNL, I get so jazzed, and it's Ryan Gosling hosting on April 13th, just in time to help promote the upcoming movie, The Fall Guy. So that's something to be very excited about.
And Ryan Gosling has hosted how many times now?
I actually don't know. I want to say that this might be his fourth time. Oh, his third time?
This will be his third time. Okay. First time he hosted was in 2015 mm-hmm. with musical guest Leon Bridges. He did a Christmas episode. And then,
Christmas episode resulted in one of my favorite Christmas sketches of all time in SNL history. That Santa Baby sketch that he did with Vanessa Bayer.
Oh, yeah.
And Beck Bennett. Oh, my God. I love that sketch so much.
And then we feel weird that this is only his third because. Yeah. And then in 2017, he did the opening episode of season 43 with musical guest Emma Stone, or sorry, musical guest Jay-Z, and Emma Stone made a cameo because mm-hmm. it would have been right after La La Land.
Yeah.
So, but he's going to be great. I know he's going to be great, assuming there's great sketches for him to work in. But he is so good
yeah.
that he will bring, he will do, as a cast or as a host, he will bring life to things that sometimes even might not be great written. So he's just so good at it. So
yeah, absolutely.
Very excited about the next two episodes.
Me too. I can't wait.
All right. Hey, Brad, where can people find us?
You can always find me online on Twitter at Ethan_Anderton. The day after new episodes of SNL air, I typically have a full review going up on slashfilm.com sometime in the late morning, early afternoon. And you can always check out what I'm saying about recent movies and TV shows over there and on the Slash Film Daily podcast, where we talk about movies and TV shows all the live long day.
And you can find me on the internet. I am now on the internet and am on Twitter and Instagram. And I even have a LinkedIn page. And you can find me on MySpace and Zanga. I reopened my live journal, too, if you want to catch me up on the live journal.
Good.
But hey, it means a lot that you listen to this podcast. Please share it with your friends. If you know anybody else that's excited about SNL and talking about the episodes and reviewing it, and you too are a student and fan of sketch comedy, it just, again, it means so much to us that you would listen and be a part of this community. You can find the 10-to-1 podcast on Twitter and on Facebook. So like us there, do us a huge favor because it means a lot to us. Rate the podcast, write a review, subscribe, because again, all of that helps us continue to build the listenership here at the 10-to-1. And I think Brad found a list that we were like a top 10 Saturday Night Live podcast, right?
Yeah, there's a website out there that they rounded up the what they think are the best SNL podcasts out there, and we were on it. So
I think we were like 8, right? Or 7.
I think it was like 6 or 7.
Okay, so I'd like to be top 5.
But I don't know if there was any necessarily rhyme or reason as far as like actually ranking them.
I don't think there was. Yeah. There was no metrics, but I would really like to be in that top 5. So smash that subscribe button and share these episodes. Hey, again, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week for Kristen Wiig. Be good to yourself. Be good to others. Bye-bye.